They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
All right, it's earnings season, everybody, and it ain't likely to be pretty. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast from APM. It is Tuesday, the 9th of October. We'll also take a bit of a world tour with some of the world's financial movers and shakers. Angela Merkel is in Greece. Ben Bernanke and Tim Geithner are in India for some reason. We'll find out why. And we'll see if I can figure out from the CEO why the oh-so-American Cheesecake Factory restaurant has plotted its big international expansion in the Middle East.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The parade of third quarter earnings announcements begins later today after the closing bell on Wall Street, ceremoniously led, as usual, by the aluminum giant Alcoa. Alcoa is expected to show a profit of maybe a penny a share, compared with 15 cents a share this time last year. As Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports now, analysts are not expecting much from the latest round of corporate profits.
Alcoa will likely be a bellwether. It's highly dependent on manufacturing and exports, which have suffered from the global slowdown. That's true of many multinationals, says Mark Zandi at Moody's Analytics.
Global trade is off a lot. I think energy companies are also struggling a bit. Prices have come off from where they were. There's no sector or industry where profit growth is picking up.
Zandi says companies have racked up record profits by cutting costs. Now they're sitting on huge piles of cash. But economist Rob Carnell at ING Financial Markets says they'll have a hard time driving up sales going forward.
Better to have strong balance sheets than not. So if we're looking for a silver lining, that is sort of helpful. But again, you know, the share buyers, the stock pickers, and the asset allocators, they still want earnings growth because in the end, the stock market's only worth what that future stream of earnings is going to deliver.
With global economic uncertainties mounting, that stream is dwindling to a trickle as we head into 2013. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
All right, not sure I want to look, but let's do the numbers. Well, Wall Street is down both on the earnings mood, you might think, and on a very gloomy report from the IMF forecasting slower global growth ahead. The U.S. is the lone, quote-unquote, bright spot. Not so bright, as it turns out, but that's where the IMF thinks there might be decent growth. But that is no comfort on Wall Street this morning. The Dow Industrials at this hour, a couple hours into trading, are down 0.6%. The S&P 500 down 0.8%, and the NASDAQ down almost 1.5%. There are rumors of trouble this morning with a major aerospace merger in Europe. British defense company BAE is declining to comment on reports that merger talks with EADS, that's the parent company of Airbus, have collapsed. The boards of both companies are meeting today, trying to figure out how they can put the two together in a way that pleases all the shareholders and regulators on both sides of the Atlantic. Well, remember yesterday we told you about the U.S. House Intelligence Committee report on Huawei and ZTE, two Chinese telecom companies that the committee thinks might have the potential to spy on us. Well, today Huawei is fighting back, and here's just a portion of their statement so you can see where they're coming from. While the report that was issued was quite strong on rhetoric, it is utterly lacking on substance. Huawei unequivocally denies the allegations in that report. Well, if you're sick of paying fees for supposedly free checking or to use your debit card, American Express and Walmart would like you to meet Bluebird. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports now on the new prepaid card designed for folks with fee fatigue.
Free checking is increasingly a thing of the past. Dan Schulman is with American Express.
Last year, banks charged $31.6 billion in overdraft fees.
According to one recent study, Americans now pay an average of $259 a year for basic checking. By contrast, the American Express prepaid Bluebird card promises no monthly fees, no annual fees, and no overdraft fees. Amy Traub is a senior policy analyst with the think tank Demos. She says hidden fees are especially hard on low-income consumers.
It really can be a drain on their finances, and so fee disclosure is very important.
Traub admits that checking accounts do have fees, but she says banks and even credit cards get lots of oversight. If you really want to protect against hidden fees, she says you need more regulation for prepaid cards. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
A short while ago, German Chancellor Angela Merkel finished a press conference in Athens with the Greek prime minister. Greeks see Germany as one big reason for the tight austerity policies that are being imposed on them. So Merkel has been met today by huge protests. Reporter John Seropoulos is joining us from Athens. And John, first question for you. 3 years since Angela Merkel set foot in Greece, what is she hoping to accomplish by going there right now?
I think that her presence here can be taken as nothing other than a show of support for the efforts of the Greek government to balance its budget and to pass the newest round of austerity measures. But I think that she's also trying to build up a bit of breathing space at home, where her constituency has been increasingly restive about her continued support for the bailout program and Greece's remaining in the Eurozone. So I think that she needs this visit where she can demonstrate to German voters that she has stood in Greece, she has looked at the situation in depth, and has found that there are serious efforts that are going on in the Greek government to ensure that Greece remains on track with its bailout commitments.
So in the press conference that she held with Antanas Samaras a short while ago, do you think she got it about right? What kind of tone did she set?
Well, she was very discreet in her usual manner, but I think that very, very quietly she said very supportive things. She said that significant achievements have been made over the last few months. She says, I hope Greece will remain in the Eurozone. And I think one of the most important things she said was that the Eurozone and Europe in general has to prove that it isn't just an area that guarantees democracy and freedom, but it also has to prove that it can provide jobs and prosperity and prospects for the young. And I think her strong implication is that keeping Greece within the Eurozone is a very important part of that project.
Reporter John Seropoulos in Athens. Thank you, John.
My pleasure.
Continuing our little world tour, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke and Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner are in India today, and they're talking about ways to improve India's economic ties with the U.S. My Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson talked earlier with reporter Rahul Tandon of the BBC, who is in Calcutta. Here's Jeremy.
So first of all, Rahul, where are you? I can hear a lot of activity in the background.
I'm near a big shopping center, and if you want to see America's influence on a new, young, emerging India, you can get it from what I'm looking at. McDonald's is there, Subway's there, and they're all pretty full at the moment. People here, they love American culture more than they love their old rulers, the British culture.
All right, well, let's get to this U.S. delegation visit today. What are Bernanke and Geithner doing there?
They're here for business, aren't they? They want to really get into that growing Indian market. They're in Delhi. They've met with the finance minister today, Mr. Chidambaram. They've issued very positive statements about India relaxing its economy, letting in American companies. They're going to be in Mumbai talking to business leaders in the next 24 hours. I think they want to make sure that as India's market opens up, American companies will be leading the charge into this country and into a potential marketplace of a middle class of 300 to 400 million people.
And we've seen India as a real growth engine in the global economy in recent years. Is that continuing now?
It's slightly ironic, isn't it, that the Americans are here on their visit in Delhi today, meeting the Indian finance minister, Mr. Chidambaram, off to meet business leaders in Mumbai in the next 24 hours, at a time when it appears that the Indian economy is really slowing down. The IMF figures, 4.9% growth over the next year. That's very, very disappointing for Indian businesses. So I think that people here are glad that the market's opening up, but probably they would have liked it a year ago when the growth rates were much higher.
The BBC's Rahul Tandon in Calcutta. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Taking a look at a map here, there are a few parts of the country where the Cheesecake Factory restaurant has not spread itself, but for the most part, you can find one all across the country. And the Cheesecake Factory is tops in terms of how much they sell per location among casual dining restaurants. Nobody makes more money per restaurant than they do. So if you're a CEO in this particular situation, you're pretty well saturated, you're making a lot, the business model is good, you would consider expanding to markets beyond the U.S. For the Cheesecake Factory, that means 22 new locations in, of all places, the Middle East. David Overton started the restaurant in 1978 as a place to retail his parents' cheesecakes. Today, he remains the CEO. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Jeff. You too.
Now, you have the ideals and attitudes and maybe the excesses of America as much on your sleeve, I would say, as any restaurant probably could. Why in the world is this a good time to launch a big expansion in the Middle East?
Well, you know, we were invited over, and I had no intention, but once I got there, it was amazing. And when we saw the American brands over there doing so well, we thought it was a good idea. We talked to the owner of the Dubai Mall, and he said we would be surprised at how much our brand is known there. They do surveys quarterly, and every time they ask the question, what American restaurant would you like to see here? Cheesecake Factory for the last 5 years was always number one.
But Cosmopolitan, you know, Dubai or Abu Dhabi, that's one thing. You're looking at maybe Cairo, Saudi Arabia. Are you worried about the culture clash?
Well, with a great partner like the Alshaya Group, we feel pretty confident. Don't forget, they're our licensee, and they have the confidence in those areas. They have many businesses in those areas. And so we are trusting that they, you know, will move forward when they're ready. So that was one of the reasons why we would never have opened on our own.
You get a lot of attention for your production processes. You make everything from scratch, more or less, and yet you're known for being extremely efficient. Did you have some kind of grand plan to achieve that harmony?
You know, we really had to do it. We somehow, and I don't even know how this happened, but a half hour before we opened our doors in 1978, we had a line that went to the next door. That's with no advertising, with nothing. So we grew up as an operating company because we always had people. We didn't have to market. We didn't have to look for people. And so we became very, very good at operations so we could try to keep some of the money that was waiting for us at the door, if you will.
You have a low-calorie menu, but let's be honest. I mean, you're called the Cheesecake Factory. You're not hawking health food here, by and large. How are you managing to successfully navigate, and from all appearances you are, the obesity epidemic?
It's all about choice. As they say, when you come into our restaurant, if you like to eat and you're not overweight and you're not obese, you're going to get everything you want. If you want to eat light, we have over 50 Skinnylicious items on our menu. So we're still in that whatever America wants to eat, we have. We give people what they want and the calories they want and the portions we want. That's how we're going to continue to grow for the future.
David Overton, CEO of Cheesecake Factory. I've enjoyed talking with you. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Nice little story as we wind down here. A retired couple from the London suburb of Bedford enjoyed gardening, so this summer they picked up an unfamiliar, exotic-looking plant at a local flea market. They tended to it lovingly, and by the end of the season, it was thriving, and it was enormous. It grew taller than their fence. Well, poking over that fence in the end may have been the plant's undoing. Local police have posted pictures on their website of what they say is the most carefully tended cannabis plant they have ever seen. And finally, I just thought this was kind of cute and heartwarming and nostalgic if you're of my generation. After last week's funding threats against Big Bird that came out of the presidential debate, folks have dug up a kind of remarkable video from 1969. It's Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, testifying before a Senate subcommittee. This is when PBS was facing a multi-million-dollar funding cut proposed by the Nixon administration. And in the video, it seems as if the senators have never heard of him. This is sort of early in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood's history, I guess. So Mr. Rogers does various things, including reciting a few songs to get them oriented.
What do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems oh so wrong and nothing you do seems very right?
And by the end of his pretty short 6-minute testimony, Mr. Rogers appears to have thoroughly charmed at least the committee chairman, who says, well, looks like you just earned the $20 million. Well, that's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and we come to you from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.